I suppose the obvious question to ask would be in two parts. Firstly, how happy are you as an Australian? Then let's dovetail that into the current election scenario. Do you think our politicians actually care? Stop and think about that for a moment. For example, what would our political decision-making process look like if we gave equal weight to both financial and what you might term well-being performance indicators, although well-being probably is open to definition? Our politicians seem to be overtly focused on lambasting each other. You know what that means? He's a mongrel. No, he's a mongrel, all that sort of stuff. And you think to yourself, really? Let's get down to governing the country. And of course, while they talk about each other's economic record, he's bad, no, he's bad, you get the whole story. And their inability to balance the books while completely forgetting about the well-being of the electorate. The cynical side of me says a lot of politicians don't even notice the people until they look down to see who it is they just stepped on. Interestingly, we talk about the electorate's well-being. Let's be honest, regardless of what any politician says, they are first and foremost bound to their party. And let me put that in simple but brutal terms. When they block vote, that means they vote like a block of sheep on an issue according to the party line. So the party whips get them together and say, on this issue, we're going to vote this way. And that's what happens. Now, there could be circumstances under which a particular politician's electorate could be extremely disadvantaged by such a move. It may well be in the quiet of the caucus room, they'll have a discussion, there might be some robust debate, somebody might say, you know something, you people are screwing over my electorate. This is where it gets interesting. If they turn around and say, yeah, tough break, this is our policy, and if that happens to burn your electorate, well, too bad, you're just going to have to suck it up. That person is then expected to go and vote for it. Occasionally, somebody crosses the floor. That's a term they use when people vote against their own party. That usually has consequences. And some parties, the ALP particularly is known for this, do not tolerate dissent well. It usually ends up in somebody falling out with somebody else. And this is part of the problem, that what we basically do is we vote for a bunch of sheep who then go and do as they're told, even if it happens to be against the interests of their constituents. We're joined on the program by Richard Kelly. He's a catastrophist. In other words, have a catastrophic situation. He kind of knows how to drill down into it and find out what's going on. G'day, Richard.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me on the show.
Pleasure. You know, something at some point I would suspect discussing about politicians and well-being, regardless of who the winner is in the forthcoming federal election, most people have decided long, long ago they don't like politicians. They've also decided politicians don't have their best interests at heart. So they go through the process not believing that anyone is really going to deliver for them. Once you take people who are party loyalists out of the equation and go where most people are, that's people who are swinging voters and vote various different ways at various different times for their own reasons. The reality is, I think a lot of people believe, I'm voting for a politician because I have to, but they're not going to look after my best interests. I'm just going to vote for the person I hate the least.
I think that's very true. And it's on the backdrop of around how the politicians of our day and age do not overtly look to see how we're balancing the well-being of all our constituents. And using some corporate language, what gets measured gets done. So we're interested in balancing the books. We're interested to make sure, is that policy funded correctly? Where's Shorten getting this from this? Where's Morrison going to be able to afford to do that? Without thinking about overall, it's more than about the financials. It's about the state of people's overall well-being. And there's many ways to define well-being. And I think if we took a leaf out of it, people that are not too far away from us, we'd start to building a better Australia.
Is that what politicians really want, though? We often have the debate about what politicians really want and what the people want. And generally speaking, most people seem to agree the two are actually poles apart.
I think, unfortunately, you probably hit on a pretty raw nerve. Politicians are in the game of being re-elected. And theirs is a difficult job because their own parties are so many factions and so many things pulling at what is in the best interest of them individually, for their party, for their electorates, and then for the country. We start measuring the level of well-being and use a couple of kind of key indicators to say, well, apart from balancing the books and having a balanced budget and budget deficits and surpluses and all those sorts of things, what are the things we as Australians actually hold near and dear as being part of being a citizen of this country? And I don't think we focus enough on it. this time with a federal election in the bagging about to happen, we're not thinking the long game.
No politician thinks the long game. I guess they're thinking from election to election. But the other issue that I think is really having an influence, and look, I'm fast coming to the conclusion that it's not a positive influence, social media. Social media, like a lot of things, becomes an echo chamber. It also becomes an area where people with often fairly strong views one way or the other find a voice and want to espouse those views. And if you sat there and you spent all your time looking at people who posted on social media and the intensity of some of their posts and how strongly their views are expressed and their opinions are put forward very forthright. And of course, a lot of people who are there are simply agreeing with them and saying, yeah, you're right. The problem is that you start to get a warped view because social media, despite what a lot of people think, is not a reflection of how the average person is thinking. A lot of people want to believe it is, but I think the reality is somewhat different.
I'd have to agree with that. Social media gives the opportunity for the squeaky wheels to be heard. It also gives a great environment for what now comes under the banner of fake news. A small number of individuals have a great opportunity to influence the agenda of a large majority of people under this banner of this is what they think is important. So how can we, through a social media platforms, create literally fake news, stuff that really hasn't happened or really has been taken completely. We talk about things being taken out of context, but completely out of context and rewritten to serve a particular purpose, whether that be a political agenda or a personal agenda.
Well, look at what a lot of people do and they say, oh, yes, but look at these views. They're not being espoused by the mainstream media, so they must be right, without realising that the so-called mainstream media that these people purport to dislike actually have obligations, legal and otherwise, to do quite a bit of fact-checking before they bother to publish something. Yet here we have people who just jump online, publish and say whatever the hell they want with absolutely no back-checking whatsoever, and all of a sudden a whole raft of people are willing to listen to it. I mean, it's almost like we know and we've known for a long time that we've had people who've been very credible sources of information. No, we're going to reject that. What we've decided is that somebody who posts something on social media is suddenly accurate. It just blows me away.
It's pretty scary, especially as we move further and further into the era of artificial intelligence and machines taking over the processes and autobots and the like. And I say take over our thinking, which literally comes through the social media platforms, that some of this can be taken quite out of our control as we approach what's regarded as or what's termed singularity. Or it's got a couple of definitions, but in one of the definitions is around when artificial intelligence exceeds human intelligence. Is it 20 years? Is it 30 years? Is it 10 years? It's a scary thought where the internet is full of stuff that if it's not through a trusted source, and people tend to disregard the trusted sources, to your point, and look at, well, what are these other actors, I'll call them, actually posting and saying, well, that must be the truth, where it can be far from the truth.
It's almost like this, what they call it, cognitive dissonance, also known as confirmation bias. People just go and look at what they want to believe, and then somebody says, this is so, and you go, beauty, see, I told you, there it is, it's so. I think the other problem we have while we talk about politicians and our well-being, we haven't seen since John Howard left office a conviction politician. John Howard was the last Liberal conviction politician. Paul Keating was the last Labor conviction politician. People are subconsciously picking that up. But I also think that the lack of conviction is being permeated through the electorate. There is an old adage of you get what you vote for. And in this particular case, and once again, look, a lot of it may come back to the fact that politicians are very much under the spotlight. Talk about John Howard or a Paul Keating. How would they have done in a social media world? Well, the answer is probably not any better than the current crop are doing. But the problem that we have is, I think, regardless of whether you agree or disagree with a particular politician's point of view, we don't seem to have anyone with the courage of their convictions.
What a sad and sorry state of affairs we find ourselves in 2019 in Australia, because I agree with you wholeheartedly. What politician is going to be willing, man or woman, enough to put their convictions up there, have the courage of their convictions, and actually stand up as a true leader, not just anointed leader, but someone who is actually going to be a true leader of this country and take us forward and address some of the significant issues that we face as a nation, and not only just as a nation, as being part of the, if you like, the global village? It's distressing to think about.
I suppose all of this stems from the fact that in New Zealand, we've seen them hand down what's been called an inaugural well-being budget. And the idea is to measure policies, not just in economic terms, but against social, cultural and environmental indicators. I guess, once again, you also run into the problem, especially now in areas like social. People have varying and widely differing views in that. So, therefore, a government from a particular ideological point of view could be quite sure that what they've done is just absolutely wonderful. But then on the other hand, it may well be there are a whole raft of people who see it differently. And I guess that's always going to be one of the problems. Look, maybe part of the problem is that politicians more and more have wanted to ingratiate themselves in our lives. Maybe what we really need is a circumstance where politicians realise people should do what they can best do for themselves, and to the extent we can and to the greatest extent we can, we need to keep out of people's lives.
So they can live and learn and be part and understand how they fit into the greater good and the greater well-being. And I couldn't agree with you more. We the political landscape in Australia is we have all this noise coming from the politicians, and especially at pivotal times around elections. And is the country being governed in the best interest of the masses, or is it being governed along party political lines and backroom deals and to your point around people voting along party lines and the sheep effect? We need to challenge ourselves as a country about what's the best. Is this political system or the way it's being implemented going to be the best for the long-term prosperity of Australia?
That's a very good question. Listen, we're out of time, Richard, but thank you very much for having a chat to us this evening.
Chris, always a pleasure to be on your show.
I always like this title. That's Richard Kelly. He is a catastrophist.
I'm Dr. Theo Spirakis from Bexley Dental. I've dedicated the last 10 years of my life to studying implant dentistry. I've travelled the globe to learn from the world's most respected clinicians, including Professor Paulo Malo, founder of the All-on-4 procedure in Portugal. It changed my life and allows me to change the life of my patients, enabling them to smile again with confidence. Why wait? Change your smile and your life today. Book your free 30-minute All-on-4 consultation now at bexleydental.com.au.